Global Cannabis March and Oregon Cannabis Festival on Saturday, May 5th from noon to 5 at Pioneer Courthouse Square, 701 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy in Portland. Roots in Harmony is the third annual benefit show and silent auction to support the Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective. There will be live music and theater performances, a seasonally inspired meal, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy, 8010 North Charleston Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's the APA Freeform Radio Hour. APA KBOO volunteers Janet and Jake will be talking about APA Heritage Month, embracing one's Asian auntie status, and welcome special guest musician Joe Kai for some live music. At 1, it's an interview from the APA Compass Archives from 2015. KBOO's DJ Diablo talks to author Richard Reeves about his book Infamy, the shocking story of the Japanese-American internment in World War II. At 2, the Lit Fantastic host, Neil Aitkins, talks to writers Lee Herrick and Lynn Maitani about their personal obsessions and how it finds its way into their works. And at 3, KBOO DJ Sun Lee takes to the airwaves with his special APA Heritage Day playlist. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Oh my god, Jake, it's our jam. Here it comes. Sing along,
it's live.
Everyone.
Oh.
The 90s, they're creeping back up.
Can you feel it?
I can feel it.
Feeling it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel all the hope coming in right now. It's like, oh, Bill Clinton's the president.
Oh yeah.
Things might be happening. Oh, wait. He's terrible. But oh, look, we have API music.
Yeah.
Maybe the 90s is going to be okay.
I think, you know, they were already over by the time,
like,
I found this.
We're sitting around listening to this, messaging each other on Instant Messenger.
Or ICQ.
Whoa.
Bringing it back, y'all.
Oh my gosh. Hey, what's up, everybody? Oh, that was so good. That was so good.
Jocelyn Ricos.
Yeah, you're tuned in to KBOO Community Radio, and welcome everyone to the APA Heritage Day Freeform Radio Hour. Let's applaud ourselves. What's going on in this hour is us being live. Me and Jake, we are some of the API, the Asian Pacific American programmers here at KBOO, and we...
The few, the proud.
Yeah.
Out here, as they say.
Yeah, and you know what? We were going to be playing some archived audio from some of the amazing programs that have been produced by API-identified programmers here at KBOO over the years. But I decided, since I was in charge of today's programming, that it was important to have some part of the day that was live to highlight that we're here.
Yeah.
That, like, literally APA, API, however you identify yourself, like, we are literally here because a lot of the times...
Physically.
Yeah, and not just, like, in KBOO.
Not just in the archive.
Yeah, we're not just in the archives, because that's so much of, I feel like, the API story is like, oh, well, you guys are okay, and, you know, you had stories a few years ago, and now everything's fine.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say, hey, no, we're here. We're here in Portland. We're here in the United States. We're here. Yeah. We're doing all the things, and so that's why we're here live. Coming up...
We're here dancing.
dancer.
Like last hour. Maybe not in the studio right now, but, you know, holding space for those who want to.
Yeah, and not
dance to Jocelyn Enriquez.
Yeah, that's a little different than maybe the cultural dance that was talked about in the last hour of Pacific Underground. But in this hour, we're going to be talking about, I don't know, the Asian Pacific Islander stuff that, well, Jake and I always talk about just like in normal life. Talking about what the month means, talk about some events that are happening in town, talk about some, I don't know, groups that are around, just APIs in the news. And then in the last half of the hour.
And Asian aunties.
We're going to talk about Asian aunties.
Everybody has one.
Joe Kai, musician and friend of KBOO, is going to be coming in and doing some live music. He's going to be doing his looping thing. Joe.
Dude, I don't know how he does that.
We're so excited.
But it's cool.
Yeah, it is way cool. Okay, can we talk about APA Heritage Month?
Must we?
Yeah.
You can tell me why you hate it so much. And
okay, so for those who don't know, the month of May is APA Heritage Month, and that is something that is like a thing that was declared by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, it came about because of the work of Asian American Pacific Islander activist.
Like Chi Sao.
Yeah, like Chi Sao, who was on this morning at 8 o'clock. And pushing to have a month recognition, and the month of May was chosen because that's when the first Japanese person came over to the United States, and it's when the Chinese workers finished the railroad.
Oh, and that one railroad that they didn't get to be in the picture for.
Well, they're in the picture, not in the picture of many, many things. There should be pictures of many things that they were in pictures for.
That one thing.
So that's why it's May. Mm-hmm. And if you are a fan of KBOO, and specifically Pacific Underground, you know that for the last 3 years, we always
have. We know there are a couple of you out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe they're in this room
right
now.
Maybe one or two.
Maybe it's just us.
Besides our families.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, what's up, Auntie? How you doing? So we usually in the month of May, we talk about Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. And then I always go on this rant about how I hate the term Asian.
Yeah. And I get forced into the role of being the cheerleader. I don't want to be the cheerleader for this. I mean, it can handle itself.
So,
Asian American Heritage.
Okay,
Month.
Let's just do a real quick boom, boom, boom for the people who maybe are like, Jenna, do the rant. Even though like nobody wants me to do the rant. I'm just going to say this so that people, if you're out there, if you're with me on this thing, okay. The term Asian and even the term Pacific Islander, right? Those are both huge umbrella terms for tons and tons of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that I'm Japanese, you're Filipino, but we're both Asian.
Mm-hmm.
What the?
What does that mean?
What is that? What? Like, it's culturally, we think of ourselves as extremely different, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're kind of geographically, historically near each other. And so now we're Asian and blah, blah, blah. And
we're not physically on the landmass of Asia, but like, it's close.
Yeah. I mean, Japan's close to Asia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it bothers me in the sense that I don't like that we get lumped into that, like, Asian. But I do also really appreciate it because of what it does for us here in the United States.
Oh, my gosh. So are you saying there's actually nuance that we can inject into this conversation?
What?
About this? Oh, my God.
Nuance.
We've got no time for that here.
Nuance and discussions, you know, about race. What? But yeah, I mean, I understand why it's a very powerful thing. And if you tuned in this morning at 8 a.m., me and Chisao Hata had a conversation.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show. About the term Asian American, because she was one of the people who were very much a part of the Asian American movement in the 70s and 60s, you know. And it's like,
thank you, Chisao.
Yeah, thank you, Chisao, for doing that fight where they were like, stop calling us Orientals. That's what we talked about this morning, where that was the term brought on by others.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they were like, no, we get to decide what we're called.
Yeah.
We're Asian. And so like, it is a total privilege for me to say like, I hate Asian. But it's because all these people did the fight and they did the work, and that, you know, now we're Asian and we do have a lot of more political power, not a lot, but a lot more political power because of that term.
And the work's never done.
Yeah.
But
so my goal is like, I would love for APA to become insignificant, like to the point where we're like, oh, we don't even need it anymore.
We're working ourselves out of a job.
Yes.
API talkers.
Right. I mean, isn't that what all activists want? Is that they want to be out of a job? Kind of. I mean, like, we all want work, but you would love the work to end, but it never does. So there we go. There's my rant.
I like it.
That's how it goes.
I mean,
how do you feel?
We've agreed, we've disagreed, you know.
How are you feeling in 2019?
How do I feel in 2019? Well, when I first discovered it, like, I didn't know that there was this whole, like, body of conversation available that had been done and really thought about it until I was in college. I mean, before that, I was just so isolated in Idaho. I didn't really think there was much connecting me to, you know, whether it's, like, Japanese exchange students or second or third generation Chinese immigrants or adoptee kids. Like, I didn't really see my struggle connected to theirs in any way.
Yeah.
Because we all were just isolated by whiteness. And and so I was grateful for it when I did find it. It gave me some vocabulary to talk about that there are a lot of commonalities against sort of like the rest of America, or not against, but just in solidarity with some of these other, you know, marginalized, separated groups. But I can see that, you know, in the future that the hope is that we won't need that language anymore, but there'll be a new language that we have to come up with. And
yeah, I can't wait for the day when annoying, there's like the young folks and they look at us and we're like, I'm Asian. And they're like, oh my God, that's so cringy. We don't have to do that anymore. Why are you doing like that? That's the goal.
Would they say it, or would they like beam it in their like, you know, AI consciousness?
Well, obviously that's what I meant, because by that point we won't, even eye contact won't be a thing.
Right. It'll just be.
Yeah. It'll just be like on Futurama where they have the iPhone where they shove the thing in your eye. Yeah. That's why it's called an iPhone. And we're all just communicating
through
there.
Bring me back.
Okay.
Or Asian American, the term could be, you know, in that, you know, old museum of the 90s and aughts that they find in Demolition Man.
Oh my gosh. That'd be amazing. Oh, wait, can we talk a little bit about the song that we started off with? We didn't even announce what that was.
Oh, yeah. So that was 90s and earth aughts and current, I guess she's still kicking, Bay Area Filipino American phenom Jocelyn Enriquez of Pinay and the solo career.
Was that
You
like,
Miss Me.
Yeah. And like, that was one of the few, and still is one of the few like singles that have gone out there, got mainstream radio play.
Right.
Was probably played in all the clubs back in the day. I mean, I didn't even know that she was Filipino until I think you told me.
Really?
And I was like,
oh.
What?
The name didn't clue you in?
I guess
you
not.
She was like Latinx,
well, you know
or
what?
Something?
Probably at the time I didn't even know her name, because in the 90s I was just like turning on the radio and was just rocking out to whatever, so I could totally sing along with that song, but I had no idea who actually sang it. Mm-hmm. And so then I think what you pointed out to me, I was like, oh my gosh, what other API music was I listening to? And then I started to dive real deep and then discovered, oh, that was just it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, for me, because like I'd seen, you know, I'd heard sort of like Filipino music in Filipino of, you know, people from the homeland. But that was the first time I'd really seen diaspora Filipinos in mainstream pop culture. And so that was like really weird to me.
Yeah, dude, it's still exciting. I mean, like, still, whenever like an Asian makes, or Asian American or a Pacific Islander American make a little headway. Yeah, because I saw, what was it? Maybe it was on Tractivist, or maybe it was on Next Shark. One of those.
What's Tractivist for those?
Tractivist.com. You guys all want to go there. Tractivist is this website that tracks Asian American and Pacific Islander American artists. So if you're ever wondering like who's out there, because it's so hard, I mean, there's so much music out there, but they break it down on that website by, you know, types of music, by instrumentation, by people's backgrounds, it's all this sort of stuff. But and then Next Shark, the other thing I mentioned, is like a Asian American news source. But they were talking about, shoot, what was my rant there? Because I just went off about these other things.
Jocelyn Enriquez. Didn't have you ranting about my girl Jocelyn.
No, just about how awesome it is. Yeah, okay. And about how like BTS has become like popular in the United States, and why is it that people from Asia with their like Asian music is more likely to become popular in the United States compared to an Asian American?
Right,
because we saw like Gangnam Style,
yeah, like, that blew
explode
up,
and that has nothing to do with like a culture that people understand. I mean, it's about living in Gangnam, you know. And but yet in America we have all these bands that are API and they don't make it.
Yeah.
But BTS will make it. And Gangnam Style will make it.
But you know, Margaret Cho's getting a reboot of her show, so.
What?
You know, I saw something about American Girl reunion. So,
Oh my God.
I need to find out more about that. Look it up. There's something going on.
Yeah. Okay. Things that are going on. Talk about things that are going on.
Yeah, let's talk about upcoming stuff.
Because it's APA Heritage Month, and guess what? There's many APA groups here in Portland, and so they're all kind holding things, holding space for the community.
Holding events.
Sometimes it's for other people. Whatever. Okay, so May 1st, even though this was last Wednesday, we're going to give a little shout out to Dime Roberts, host of Stage and Studio. She did.
Go Dime.
She was one of the speakers at the city's proclamation for APA Heritage Month for the city of Portland. And she talked about her group Meteorites and, you know, what it is to do that. So go Dime. That was last Wednesday. So go back in time. If you want to go see that. Then on May 1st through the 31st, Poca Kim and Karumi Conley will be exhibiting their artworks at Care Oregon's lobby for APA Heritage Month. Then today through Sunday, the Tara Dupshin group sorry, my notes are all mixed up here. Let me try that one again. Today through Sunday, you can visit the Tibetan Cultural Association in Portland. It's having a special public event. It's a three-day Buddhist ceremony that combines prayers, meditation, music, and Dharma dancing. And so you can look that one up. Saturday, May 4th, May is Multicultural Day at the Lonsu. Lonsu is doing all sorts of stuff for the month. They're having dancing and music. So yeah, their website lists just tons of stuff that's happening. But
I think
Saturday,
Kapana's going to be there.
Yeah, there's going to be like taiko. There's going to be Hawaiian dance. There's all sorts of things going on. Then on May 18th, Apano is having their Voices of Change gala, talking more about the Dime. Meteorites is having, they're playing here on this bridge, the ISM project. That's like this huge project that's about collecting stories.
The monologues.
Yeah, the monologues that are about stories, about immigration and just they're
some really heartbreaking, amazing stuff.
Yeah, so that has multiple dates. So that's meteorites.org. Then on May 25th, Jake, there's White Noise Project. Yes, our
29th.
Yeah, our friend Jake is one of the hosts and founders of that. So White Noise Project 13, Asian Pacific American Heritage Month from 7 to 9 p.m. And who are going to be the guests?
We've got, I think you might have some notes from last year or something like that, but we've got a Filipino poet from L.A., Jason Magabo Perez, on Wednesday the 29th with local writers Jessica Yen, friend of the show, an Apano member, and Beth Havor-Kafka, who's an amazing writer also, and a couple more folks that I will be announcing soon. So come check it out.
And then on May 29th at the Portland Chinatown Museum, they'll be hosting Helen Zia, who will be in conversation, and she's the author of Last Boat Out of Shanghai.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that's going to be amazing.
And then May 7th, also within that series of the stories my mother and father told me, is Tracy Wong, author of Stories of My Dad, Jewish Baseball Legend, Civil Rights Activist, Human Shield, Mayor of Chinatown, and more.
Yeah.
So those,
and actually,
that
series that they're doing in the Portland Chinatown Museum is really cool. I had the privilege of reading there last Sunday with friend of the show Jenny Chu, and we've actually got a little clip of Jenny talking about a certain empowering
manifesto. We'll talk about that later. We'll do that later.
Okay, we still got events.
I know, we still got events. Right. Okay, so like those are. Oh, and then one more. We got Ken.
Oh yeah, Ken Yoshikawa.
Yeah. What are details of
an event
his thing?
For H Mart, celebrating H Mart opening? A bunch of API writers and artists at the Hilo Gallery on the 24th of May, which is a Thursday, I think.
Google, look on your calendar.
Yeah.
Okay, and then on May 20th at Uwajimaya, all the way out in Beaverton, or through May 20th, they're flying their carp fish flags, you know, the koinoboro. Like, I personally think they were kind of cool. But that's something else. So, stuff going on in May.
All right.
There's all sorts of stuff going on in...
Check it out. Lots of super Asian stuff.
Super Asian, super Pacific Islander things. Mainly Asian, because that's kind of how it goes. I mean, like, okay, moving on to other topics, or going back to the original topic of APA Heritage Month, just as even its foundings of being in May, that it's associated to Japanese immigration and Chinese finishing the railroad. I mean, that's such like the American thing where it's like, let's make it all about the East Asians.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's on behalf of all the East
Asians. We out here.
Sorry. So yeah, that's why I have
not East Asian.
That's kind of why I have some of the problems with that month. But H Mart, talking about more East Asians, and you just mentioned H Mart with a Ken Yoshikawa's thing event. H Mart, we need to talk about this because this is the exciting Asian American news in Portland as of recently. Like the thing that is like yay, because we don't always get a lot of yays.
Mm-hmm.
But the yay is that the H Mart opened on Belmont after teasing that they would be open for like the last year.
Yeah.
I thought they were literally never going to open.
Zupan's location.
I thought it was going to be like a hoax where they just talked about it for a year and then they just went away. Okay.
April Fools.
Have you been?
Hmm?
What'd you think?
It was good. It felt more mainstream than the whole Asian market feel because.
Right. It doesn't feel like Fubon.
I go to Fubon a lot. I go sometimes go to Hong Fat, which is even more kind of immigrant style, kind of super Asian. I've been to Ranch 99, but this felt like a hybrid. Maybe the other H Marts are different.
Oh, yeah, they're totally different. They're way more like.
I was going to say, because I think I'd been to the one on the west side
before
in Seattle.
They have way less like non-Korean products.
Right. A lot of stuff that's not marked in English and stuff. You're like, you either you know or you don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is cool because it makes you figure that out.
Okay. So I went to H Mart for the first time. I was super excited. Super, super excited. I think I went like 2 or 3 days after they first opened. Was super excited to go to H Mart because one... The parking lot was on point. It smelled like an Asian parking lot. I don't know how to describe what that smells like.
Is it like underneath the building or to the side?
Yeah. It's one of the...
I did street parking
when I
went.
It's next to it. Yeah, okay. There's like a covered parking next to it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I thought I was nuts, but I get out of the car. The person that's with me is like, oh my God, it smells like an Asian parking lot. I was like, yes! I mean, I know that sounds weird, but if you've... been to Asian grocery stores your whole life, you know this smell I'm talking about. And it felt like home. Like I literally got so excited when I smelled the parking lot that I started jumping up and down and squealing.
Wow.
Yeah. I was just like, oh my God, it's that
for people who don't know, you grew up in Southern California around lots of Asians.
Yeah. Around lots of Asians and just, you know, and just like having that familiarity like so close in, because like the API community always has to go all the way out to like Fubon. Like if you live somewhere in the middle, then you're either having to go on either two extremes. You're either going all the way out to 82nd or you're going all the way out to Beaverton.
Yeah. So this is the first one that's like pretty close to the inner core.
Yeah, pretty close. And so that, it just felt like exciting that maybe I could get vegetables.
We made it, Jenna.
Yeah. We finally have an H Mart on Belmont. Yeah. And like, I mean, it's just like, it's a big deal. Like H Mart is a big deal because it's one of the only... grocery stores that is growing as a chain, right? Like you have like 99 Ranch Market, but when you see H Marts, they're like in the middle of Manhattan. I'm like, wow, they're getting like so mainstream, and it's so nice to, I don't know, just feel
normalized,
seen,
feel the culture normalized,
even though I'm
right?
totally not Korean.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think any store that it's cool to see a bunch of aunties walking around talking in other languages.
I know.
I'm here for that.
Okay, but. I will say that I did have moments of frustration that I've heard the story from other Asian people who have been to the H Mart, like with their frustration of going for the first time, being so excited. Oh my God, there's just like all these products and there's, you know, Asian people everywhere. And then everybody has this kind of same story where they're like, But it was so frustrating to watch these, I'm just going to say that because every story has to do with white people making fun of the products that they're seeing because they're going into the H Mart for the first time and they're like, what is that? And they're making fun of the packaging. They're making fun of the language. I mean, they're just making fun of stuff. And I'm like, why are you in here?
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be curious and to want to see something that maybe you've never seen before, but why literally mock it out loud next to the people for whom these products are made?
Yeah. People for whom it's, like, intended and empowering, you know, to them.
Yeah.
To
see themselves. So,
I don't know. White people, why?
Yeah. So those are moments of feeling frustrated. But then we have moments of empowerment in life.
Yes.
And first, we're going to give a huge shout out to Jenny Chu. You're out there. Woman, give me life. Okay, so our friend Jenny Chu, she recently, we were at Dim Sum, and she read her Asian Auntie manifesto.
And I don't know how else to describe it. It is.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to take the time to try to describe what an Asian Auntie is, because if you don't know, then you just don't know. But if you know what an Asian Auntie is, first of all, thank the Asian Aunties in your life. Because
you've probably done something that you need to thank them for.
Yeah. And they have saved you so many times and you don't even know. And so when I heard that, I was like, Jenny, we need to record this and we need to put you on the radio because the whole world needs to know about your Asian Auntie manifesto. So here's Jenny Chu telling us how it is.
Your community Asian Auntie may or may not have children, and they may or may not be blood related to you, and they may or may not be older than you, and they may be any gender identity. But you know an Asian auntie when, one, you feel deep reverence and respect for them. Two, you go to them for clear and direct guidance because you know they don't suffer fools and their advice is sharp and for your own good. Three, impeccable style. Always best dressed at any function, whether it's a brunch, family gatherings, community forums, bottom lining the world, running the show, at a protest, quietly and expertly changing systemic oppression, etc. Four, you never know who they're dating, but you know they're getting or in charge of getting their own sexual needs met. Five, they don't age. Hashtag visors with lots of S's. Six, you're probably a little intimidated by them and at other times a lot intimidated by them, but you also know that you can always go to them. They'll also check on you periodically, and they do it in such a way that you don't even know they're keeping tabs. And if you're acting a fool, look out for hashtag side eye. Seven, no matter your gender or age, you find it confusing between the feeling of wanting to f*** them or be them when you grow up and the thoughts of whether or not that is appropriate because aren't they your auntie? And auntie just told you that you were f***ing up and to get your shit together, so you're both scared and oh so sexually confused. Eight, they are fierce. Fierce about their interests, fierce about their principles, fierce about their various projects, fierce about their love for you, if you're one of the lucky ones for them to love. 9. They are never boring. 10. They don't brag. They don't need to. They just do and just are who they are. And that is exactly why you love them.
Okay. Damn, that's your community auntie.
Jenny Chu. What inspired you to write that one?
Oh my gosh. I was inspired to write it because I've been using the Asian Auntie moniker a lot lately. Hashtag Asian Auntie, this is my life. And I think part of it is because I get so much pride out of the sort of Asian Auntie energy, right? They have their lives together. They're oftentimes just a boss in life. But then I realized after talking to two friends that the Asian Auntie moniker is also very... it really desexualizes, like, me. I'm like, I'm not necessarily, I don't think, you know, I'm not like 70 years old. I'm fairly young-ish. And I wanted something that felt really, really empowering, and I really wanted to reclaim it because I think being an Asian auntie is actually pretty bad ASS. and, you know, somebody who you can go to, I think, for support, but also someone who really doesn't put up with a lot of BS is incredible. And so I realized that it just wasn't the Asian auntie image, right, is like the Asian auntie with the visor with like probably permed hair.
Oh, she has to have the elastic.
Yeah, and the elastic pull pants, you know, over the shirt.
Yeah, but she's got mad snacks.
She does have mad snacks. I have mad snacks.
You're winning.
I'm winning.
Hashtag onto winning.
But also just like recognize that I'm vital. And I think that the Asian auntie moniker is a vital one for me. And just how do I redefine that where the image is a little bit different? And I, one, hate pictures of myself, but I think it would be really fun to do like an Asian auntie Instagram project where Asian aunties just, it's like hashtag Asian auntie on a Monday in their like power suit or like Asian auntie at dim sum in like this beautiful floral dress or something. I don't know. It could be really fun. So we'll see. That's in, yeah, it's just in, yeah. I wrote this like literally when I woke up one morning after having that conversation with my two friends who are also, you know, boss-ass Asian aunties themselves. Yeah.
When did you start thinking of yourself as an Asian auntie? Like around what, did that come with age or experience? What motivated that?
Yeah, I think it came with maybe a little bit of both where like I felt just, I think, with lived experience, a lot more competent. I mean, this is going to make me sound like such, well, I'm just going to say it. I just feel a lot more competent than a lot of folks in my life sometimes. And so I think I'm like, oh, what is that feeling, right? It's like the Asian auntie that kind of like holds everything together but doesn't do it in a way that's oppressive, but is there and is always kind of in the background or is always bottom lining things. Yeah, and I think maybe I started feeling like an Asian auntie when I started, in my 30s. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think people get offended by it when they're attractive, you know, femme-identified folks that are boss-ass people. But, yeah, and then they get, and then they're, like, attractive, powerful people. But then they have this image of the Asian auntie with, like, the pants hiked up to, you know, their underboob. And that is just not the image that I conjure up when I think about an Asian auntie. I think of the Asian auntie who kind of, like, breezes in at, like, family gatherings. And they always look amazing. You know, they may or may not have kids. They've, like, traveled the world and they always come back. And they have these stories. And you ask them, Asian auntie, what have you been up to? And they're like, oh, you know, I just started an organization. You know, but then I'm also doing this and I'm also doing that. I went scuba diving and then I met this amazing instructor. Oh, you're too young to hear about that. Moving on. You know, it's the sort of untethered, powerful Asian femme that I think about at family gatherings who are set apart from the sort of heteronormative gender roles.
I feel like...
Yeah, I think Asian aunties are super, super dope.
I definitely have those in my family.
Yeah.
And, like, totally still look up to them.
Yeah.
That, like, okay, you weren't what everyone expected.
Yep.
You're probably not even what you expected.
Yep.
And I freaking love it.
Yes.
And continue to inspire. Okay, so then there's like people who maybe aren't in your family, right? There's like the people out in the community. So do you have aunties that you like look up to still?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I think actually a lot of my friends, and maybe it's a little age-based. Not really. I think it's just a vibe. The way that I really describe it, it's like an Asian auntie to me is both attitude, vibe, heart, and style. Like, that's my definition of an Asian auntie. Like, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Like, they sort of have to encompass all of that. and, like, style is, like, really vibey, right? Like, you could have, I mean... So maybe style and vibe are the same synonym. But that's what I think about.
Here's how you style your vibe.
Yeah.
Or you vibe your style.
Oh!
look at all this auntie advice right here.
I know.
You heighten your language.
What? So let me ask you a question. What is your Asian auntie advice for today's, I don't know, community members?
I have so much advice. And I think that's a sign of an auntie, too. They're like totally ready to give you the advice.
Yes.
And they're totally ready to be wrong. I think that makes a strong auntie, too. It's like they give all the advice like you know it. Yeah. And then they just look at you and laugh at you, and you're like, rocking.
Yeah.
Thanks for challenging me.
I think that's super true.
advice for the youths or the up-and-coming. Okay, I'll give some advice, and then you give some advice about to the up-and-coming aunties of the world, the up-and-coming APA, API, AAPI, however you identify youths. You're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly as you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, advice for the young Asian aunties is that just to do you and to do you unapologetically. And I think number one was respect and reverence, because I feel like that is a status that not a lot of young folks even want. And that is, like, absolutely primary to how I move about the world. I'm like, and I think that's actually how I know I'm an Asian auntie. Because I'm just like, are you giving me respect? Do you revere me? And I'm not talking about, like, adulation. I'm not talking about fame. I'm not talking about sort of, like, all these, like, stock. Like, I'm not talking about fawning over, like, I'm really just talking about deep respect. Like, do I carry myself with respect, and do people respect me? Is a definite foundational trait of an Asian auntie, either, you know, given and then also felt. It's really, I think, resting in one's confidence and, yeah, like, not being apologetic about it.
Jenny Chu, let's
go, Jenny.
Yeah, Jenny.
Okay, in case everyone's like, well, what voice is that now? Also, welcome, Joe Kai.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us today.
Oh man, thanks for having me. It's
APA
a pleasure.
APA Heritage Day. You know how this all came about was because Joe heard the promo on KBOO and then texted me and said, "Hey, what's up on May 3rd? Want me to help out?"
Yeah.
I was like, yes, come in. Did you just offer?
It was a good spot.
Yeah, dude. You
know, I was like, oh, wow, Jenna. I want to talk with Jenna about APA stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's the community coming.
Thanks. I'm radio
together.
Winning. This means that I can write a one-minute spot. Yes! This is why KBOO is a learning institution, and they taught me to do that.
Yeah. When you walked into KBOO 3-4 years ago, did you
know
how to do any
write
of that
a spot,
stuff?
But look at that. I wrote a spot so good that I called in Joe Kai.
Yep.
It was a bat signal. Like, Asian, what would an Asian bat signal look like?
An Asian, I don't know. For me, it would just be like shrimp chips.
Oh, okay.
The logo, and then with an arrow, and I would just run to it. So,
or just like the silhouette of an Asian grandma.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With like a cane held threateningly above her head.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, talk about Asian aunties real quick. Jude, do you have Asian aunties in your life?
Yeah.
And do you have respect for the aunties? What's your opinion about them?
Some of them. it's funny. I think my biological aunties are all across the ocean in Korea. And they also have all the baggage that they bring with them and the inner sibling relationships that, you know, can get sticky. But I certainly have Asian aunties, people who I consider to be Asian aunties in Portland and in Seattle, and other maternal figures who I think I really respect and who criticize me with love and encouragement.
With love.
So.
See, this is the heart of the Asian auntiness. Is that like the criticism is there, and at first you want to be like, oh, why are you being so hard on me? And then you're like, oh my gosh, I needed that.
Right.
Yeah, because even
it's a hard balance to strike.
Yeah. Mm. Like, some people call me an auntie, but then I also have aunties that I look up to because I need those moments where other aunties look at me and go, no, Jenna, no. Mm. So.
Well, it's certainly a call-in moment though, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not, yeah. They're not going to blast you on social media.
Well, they might.
They might.
Out of love.
out of
love.
Okay. Okay.
But
Thank you, Jenny. But moving on to why Joe is here. Joe, you have a violin with you.
Yeah.
And you got your whole setup.
I do.
Okay, because we're in Freeform Radio Hour, Joe had an idea that there would be freeform music with some poetry because...
Oh my God.
Yeah, Jake.
The great poet.
I don't know about great poet, but I do it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Shall we just hear what comes out?
Yeah, let's improvise.
I don't really have any...
Whatever comes to your mind.
You don't really have any poetry? Come on, man.
Well, I don't really freestyle. I don't know.
No. I think you should read one of your poems.
Or somebody's poem, whatever.
Yeah, okay. And then I'll just respond conversationally through music.
It's what we call Super Live Radio. You guys, Super Live Radio with Joe Kai and Jake Moss.
Okay. Just start it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a new one I wrote as part of a commission from Apano. For the Families Reimagined, and it deals with my grandfather's stories, a World War II veteran, and immigration. I called it Consular, it's part of a longer poem called First Fruits, sort of after an oblation or kind of offering for the ancestors. It's dedicated to for Ezequiel Verri, 1921 to 2007. Consular report of birth abroad. You didn't even need papers the first time you almost went stateside. They needed coolies from an Orient more like the East Indies. It was either Alta, California, or Hawaii, or Mindanao, no difference between them empirically. So you chose the latter. You were not a ward of the state, but later became one of two childless Americans, the Verris. You took their name after another empire took everything else. No longer a Nunag or Pineda, your family tried to make you their slave after your parents passed, so you ran. The resistance came calling, but you would have fought without the offer of citizenship, which was good since they took it away anyway. Soon after the bodies were cold, you had to look up what rescission meant. Your education ended at 10. Forget about benefits. You had nothing to inherit in the ruins, no papers your folks claimed you with, no reparations paid to anyone that looked like you. One spring break, a college friend joked about seeing the server's immigration papers, and I ghosted her after, but regret not calling it out. Your boy R and his wife went TNT in the 80s because my cousin had epilepsy so bad it might kill him, but it shouldn't have mattered. When we flew back, what was left when you left to the banks of the Rio Grande to Pampanga, was it home? What did it look like? On my trips back to your town later, I couldn't help but see other selves, half Asians, whose first world dads didn't care to file papers. When I hear people rail about illegals, I think of you and how you had nothing, how you always made sure my cousins and I knew we were citizens of your nation. Thank you. That was a beautiful treatment.
All day.
Dang.
Oh my gosh, can we just have Freeform Radio Hour until 4? Like, can this just be APA Heritage
I would
Day?
Do that.
You guys, when is that
I don't want to preempt Neil, but...
I know. When is this going to be the next like white noise collaboration?
Oh my God, I would love that.
I mean, I've been about this. Yeah. Anytime.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh, you guys are here in the community building right now. This is how everything gets organized.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I think it's also the creativity and building what I mean, you guys were talking about earlier in the hour, what is it, what is Asian? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. It's a new term, and sure, we have similar experiences to a certain extent, but I think it's through kind of generative creativity, right, and sharing and combining and collaborating that we then create that identity
right.
in a more meaningful way than, oh, our histories are somewhat parallel, or our geographies were not even that, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, far apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously the Filipino-American experience is very different from the Korean-American experience. I was just listening to Dime's program earlier about Filipino laborers, right, in Stockton and in Central California, and the farming labor, which is different than Korean immigration, which was, you know, it's at the earliest probably like 50s and 60s, you know, after the Korean War, there was a shortage of doctors in the U.S., especially in rural areas. So they were brought over here as highly educated individuals.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the larger immigration trend that happened after that. But yeah, that's why. Thank you for sharing your poetry.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that part of the history. I know, like, you lived in Seattle for a while, and there's this strong kind of Asian American, even though you're not from there, but you live there, you know, in your working life, and there's a strong history of kind of Asian American activism across communities that that I feel like we can learn a lot from in Portland here, with the International District being sort of like Japantown, Manilatown, Koreatown, Chinatown, all kind of coming together and having this conversation, right? And like you said, I agree. Yeah, the culture is in the in-between.
Right.
And it's the conversations that we have and the sort of spaces that...
What do you think are the obstacles to that? At least in Portland, I don't know.
In Portland... I don't know. It's too simplistic to say it's just a numbers game because like people are here and... You know, geographically, they're spread out in the Portland area. There's no sort of like kind of strong immigrant enclave that you have in other places.
Right. Because there are a lot of Koreans, but they're in Beaverton, which is on the other side of the majority white mass that is central Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
And you and your wife live on the east side too, right? Are you?
Yeah, we're both in Woodstock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what's that like, kind of being one of the few Koreans isolated in Woodstock?
Do people confuse you for the one other Asian in Woodstock?
No, I mean, actually, I went into Grand Central Bakery on Woodstock, and like Korean food is trending right now.
Yeah.
Like kimchi
and
stuff like that. But they had a Korean... soup, and I think it was literally called Korean soup as one of the special soups of the day of the week.
What does that mean,
right?
Korean
and so soup? I engaged in conversation. I was like, "What is this?" And he was a well-meaning gentleman who was very visibly nervous about the fact that someone that looked like me was being
calling him out.
What? Yeah. No, not even just asking.
Just
and he's like,
"Ah,
it is." And you know, it was basically a miso soup with like tofu in it and some cabbage. And
what made it Korean? Did he put like...
Well, miso, which is not that, from Korea.
Oh, that's no. What, because I assumed that's that it Japanese. Was gonna be some kind of like chicken soup, and then he put like the gochujang in it.
Right, exactly. And there wasn't even gochujang in it. It was basically like miso and cabbage and tofu. And it's like, you know, I mean, we have kind of a variant of miso in Korea, right?
Yeah.
It's called doenjang.
But it's in my palate, they're two totally different. They're similar, but they taste so different.
Totally different, right? Doenjang is like, it's like whiskey.
Yeah.
And like miso is like sake. Like it has, or like a nice white wine, right?
Yeah.
It has kind of that cleanliness and kind of balancedness, whereas like doenjang is like fermented soybean.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of like my Woodstock experience. They really mean well, you know. People really mean well, and they're curious, and sometimes, you know, I engage in those conversations, and sometimes I'm like, I tasted it, and he was explaining, and I was just nodding.
Was it good?
That doesn't sound right.
No.
Because like miso and cabbage don't always go well with like Japanese miso because of like what you're talking about. The flavor's too subtle.
Right. you know, it wasn't, I would never order it, but he gave me a free bowl. He was like, oh, here, like try it. And, you know, I didn't pat him on the back or anything, but
no. Wait. So when you first came in, we were playing the Asian auntie bit, and then you gave us some smack. We're like, "Whoa, you're talking about the H Mart!"
Yeah,
Korean in the room. So now we got the Korean in the room. Let me ask, have you been to the H Mart?
I have.
And what'd you think?
I mean, I love it. I think it's super nice, and I mean, I think it's pretty similar in terms of the products that they carry to the one in Tigard.
Yeah.
And H Mart, I think it's different because of the fact that it's an international corporation. I think it has a lot of capital and a lot of investment, whereas you know things like Fubon does not, right?
Yeah.
Or even Buhan, which is also on 82nd, another Korean smaller grocery, is you know has that more kind of what we associate, I think, with like Asian grocery store.
Yeah,
the diaspora feel.
Yeah,
right?
The diaspora. That's a good way to put it. The diaspora feel. I think H Mart has kind of as a larger capitalistic entity kind of seized on that. It's a weird experience being there.
To me, they're like the new seasons of like the Asian grocery stores where you walk in, you're like, this is...
It's cleaner, it's fancier looking.
Yeah, super fancy. And then also just the clientele, right? It's on Belmont next to the liquor store. I mean, it's, whereas Tigard, you go there, almost everyone there is ethnic of some sort. And definitely there are a lot of Koreans. Whereas here, I think the workers are Korean. But it is, you know, it's indicative, the clientele is indicative of the neighborhood, which is to say mostly younger white people. And so if I'm kind of sifting around, I almost feel like there are people kind of watching to see what I get, you know, like, oh, like, what is that? You know, is that good? Oh, he got that. I better go get that.
Right.
It's funny. Yeah, I've had that same like experience in places. And then I'm like, I wonder if people know that I don't necessarily buy the best thing, but the cheapest thing. And maybe I like something because it's gross. Good luck.
Right. This is the McDonald's of like Olympia, you know. Don't get that.
Totally.
But I'm getting it because it's cheap.
Yeah. Or I'm too lazy to make it myself, so I'm going to buy the terrible processed food version of the thing.
Right.
I totally buy pre-rolled lumpia sometimes. I mean, don't take away my Filipino card. Sorry,
you
heard
know what
here.
You're gonna have from that comment? There's an auntie coming up.
Oh, I got side eye from that.
An auntie is gonna teach you how to make lumpia because that's how it goes. I mean, I teach dumplings to people. I'm like, you don't go buy that.
Teaching dumplings. I
you
like
got,
that.
You that is that's how we pass on the culture. We all it's through the dumplings.
Right.
I'm convinced.
Right.
I mean, look, it had a whole scene.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
And so what we got in our last few minutes here is Jokai with his violin talking. And although we love talking to Jokai, I'm also wondering if Jokai wants to play.
Sure. Can I share a poem?
Yes.
Like, can I? I'm not. You know, I certainly don't consider myself a poet by any means. But I was thinking on the way here of all the places. This is the place where I can share this. And, you know, you just saying Crazy Rich Asians reminded me of it.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, my God, no. Thank you for letting me share this because...
I'm sorry that I can't give you the violin treatment that you gave me for my poem, but I'm here playing an invisible violin.
No.
With my fingers in your honor.
It's the emotional energy, right?
I support you.
I wrote this in January, and I have not shared it because there's no place... There are very few places in Portland that I would share this except
made on, it at White Noise.
Yeah, exactly. Except on radio for everyone to hear. Okay. This is called Crazy Rich Asians in a Portland Theater. The tutting of the white lady disapproving of opulence displayed on Asian bodies. I wonder if she feels that way when watching Austin on screen or doubts Princess Di's virtue in proportion to the number of pearls lacing her neck. I bet she enjoys the silk kimono nailed to the wall in her minimalist mid-century home in Lake Oswego. Mm-hmm. She sits there sipping jasmine, admiring the meticulous handiwork, and thinks, that's where you belong.
That's so good.
I can totally imagine that moment so clearly.
Yeah.
But it's the world first, you know.
Thanks for sharing that.
Poems. I appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for listening to it. Yeah, it's such
people don't know you were an English teacher.
Yeah.
In your past life.
For four years. I was just talking about Anne Bradstreet with my therapist before I got here. Yeah. Which is perhaps the subject of that poem. I don't know.
Wow, interesting. Interesting.
Did the movie, like, was that the catalyst for
watching that in Clackamas.
Around that crowd.
Yeah, in that crowd. And, you know, my partner and I were the only people that were Asian, you know, basically the handful, one of the handful of Asians in a majority white theater. And so we were just laughing at stuff that nobody was laughing at. That context is so key.
Yeah, it is. I flew all the way, and this is totally my privilege, but I flew all the way down to the Bay Area to watch it with my best friend just so we could be in an audience with other Asians. Okay, so then we go on a Tuesday, and we go, like, at noon, so, like, there's no one in the theater, basically, except for us, and then, like, two Asian couples that are, like, all older like Chinese people, like total elders. And they were like just enjoying it. It was totally worth like what it took to get down there.
Yeah,
because I thought about it after we walked out of the space. We were like, wow, that would have been different if we had like been up in Portland to watch that. And even though that movie is cringy on so many levels and so many things,
but my experience was kind of like yours, Joe. Yeah, I watched it in Selwood movie theater.
You watched it at the Selwood theater?
Yeah.
Oh goodness,
it was like I'm blinded.
it's rep sweats, right? I mean, as someone who's just sitting there trying to watch a movie, if you're in that context, right, that you're talking about, Jake, like you're worried about how this movie will represent who I am as the movie ends and I'm walking out of the theater.
Yeah. Okay, talking about representation, let's represent Joe as a musician again, just because I was in here, I'm like, Joe, you came all the way down here. And we only got like a couple minutes left, so how about we have Joe Kai take us out.
Okay.
Joe Kai, how do people find out about you and your music?
JoeKaye.com, JoeKaye. I have a show coming up on July 14th at Turn, Turn, Turn in Northeast Portland. So,
awesome.
Yeah. What should I play?
As I wait by the door, cry in my sleep, in my dreams, as I wait for more. So where are you? Where are you? Why did you go? Where are you? Where are you? Why?
JoeKaye.com.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Jenna.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Village Market's 8th birthday block party celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Village Market is a nonprofit of Village Gardens working alongside North Portland community members to build food resiliency through youth leadership, community farming, and good food access. The Village Market Birthday Block Party will include face painting and screen printing, a plant start sale hosted by our community gardeners, raffle prizes, food, plus a bake sale hosted by our youth leadership team, Foodworks. Again, that's Village Market's 8th Birthday Block Party Celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Learn more at villagegardens.org or at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival on Saturday, May 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival will be screening a collection of 9 of the best short films from the 2019 festival. Before the screening, there will be a reception with beverages and light food and a raffle to support the Cascade Forest Conservancy. Again, that's the Wild and Scenic Film Festival on Saturday, May 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Clark College, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 1 o'clock. Coming up next, it's an interview from the APA Compass Archives from 2015. KBOO's DJ Diablo talks to author Richard Reeves about his book Infamy, the shocking story of the Japanese-American internment in World War II.
This is Diablo with KBOO Community Radio, and inspired by today's special programming for Asian Pacific American Day, I wanted to air this interview I did a few years back with Richard Reeves about the Japanese internment. My whole family's headed out to Minidoka, Idaho, where my father was born in a concentration camp during World War II. We're doing a pilgrimage. So I wanted to share this with you guys. Check it out. This is Tim Nakayama, and I'm here at KBOO Community Radio with the renowned author and journalist, Richard Reeves, who is the author of a brand new book. Can you tell us the title of your new book?
Infamy, the shocking story of the Japanese-American internment in World War II.